Israel, also called Jacob, set out on his journey with all that he had. He came to Beersheba. He offered sacrifices to the God of his father, Isaac. God spoke to Israel in visions of the night and said, "Jacob, Jacob." And he said, "Here I am." Then he said, "I am God, the God of your father. Do not be afraid to go down to Egypt, for I will make of you a great nation there. I myself will go down with you to Egypt, and I will also bring you out again. And Joseph's own hand shall close your eyes." Then Jacob set out from Beersheba, and the sons of Israel carried their father Jacob, their little ones and their wives, in the wagons that Pharaoh had sent to carry them. They also took their livestock and the goods that they had acquired in the land of Canaan, and they came into Egypt, Jacob and all of his offspring with him, his sons and his sons' sons with him, his daughters and his sons' daughters, all his offspring he brought with him into Egypt.
"Have the servants leave my quarters. Inform Pharaoh that I will not be attending him at the royal table this evening." I don't believe it. They're coming. Here. All of them. They're moving. Here. My father, who I have not seen in 22 years. He's coming. He will be 130 years old. I hope they hurry. All of my brothers. They're coming. Reuben, he said he has four sons. Oh, what were their names? Halak and Palu and Hezron, Carmi. I have nephews who I've never even met. Simeon has six sons. Levi has three sons. Judah said he's had five sons. Two have died by what he described as a fool's death. I don't know what that means. But I saw the look on Judah's face. He knows what it is to lose sons. Issachar, he has four sons. Gad and Zebulun, they're coming. Asher, he's the grandfather. Dan and Naphtali, Benjamin, they're all coming, along with their families. By the gracious hand of Pharaoh, he has decided to send a mule train along with servants to assist them on their journey 250 miles from Canaan. They are being loaded and packed. Their lives were dwindling under the burden of famine. They had times when they didn't know where the next meal was coming. And now, all the supply of Egypt will be theirs. When they arrive, it is as though they are going to be governed and sheltered and shepherded under my own wings. Add to them myself and my sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, and when they arrive, we will be 70 in all, who come from the loins of my father Jacob, who they now call Israel. I have missed so much. After 22 years of distance, there's so much to learn. So many young faces to touch, so many family to embrace. So much I have missed. Oh, I have missed so much. Do you know what it is to be homesick? Homesick. There is an ache deep within you for what you have known. You crave the sights, the sounds, the aroma that are familiar. When you're home, there's no fear present. Well, when you're home, people expect you to have a place and they expect you to be in your place, and you have the same expectation of them. But when you're homesick, every face a stranger. The people, their mouths open, noise comes forward, but you have no idea what they're saying. You don't understand the language. Not a single concept translates. When you're homesick, no one's interested in you. When you're homesick, no one has empathy for your setting. They don't know your name. When you're homesick, it is as though not a single person on the face of the earth cares if you are alive. If you die today, tomorrow, no one grieves you. Do you know what it is to be homesick? I do. I do. And now that they are coming, I feel more homesick than I have ever been. I want to introduce my two sons to my father. My oldest son is nearing 8 years of age. He has never met his grandfather. I want my boys to sit upon his aged knee. I want them to receive the love and the nurture from their grandfather. I want him to place his hands upon their heads to speak a blessing in regard to the future and declare it by his own voice. I want to teach my nephews how to fish, how to learn a trade of commerce. I want to teach them how to love and to lead and to know their God. Oh God, you are the one who has brought me this richness. It is as though you are using me as a vessel of rescue for my entire family. It is more than I could have ever dreamed. Dreams. They are my story. There are some who believe that my dreams were shattered. And I suppose there was a time when I too believed they were. And yet I have seen God's abundance. I have recognized the goodness of his riches. I have named my children out of that blessing. My oldest son is Ephraim. His name means God has made me forget. And he has. My younger son, Ephraim, his name means God has made me fruitful. And he has. It is clear that the dreams of God are so much wider than my dreams. For he has dreams for my life and the life of my family, a family that will become a people who will become a nation who will give the revelation of the character of God as he unfolds the plan of redemption, rescue, and reconciliation for all mankind. God's dreams are so much larger than my dreams. Dreams. It was prisoner dreams that got me an audience before Pharaoh. It was Pharaoh's dreams that got me where I am now. Vice regent of all of Egypt, second in command to Pharaoh himself, I bear on my own finger the signet ring of the king. It stamps the edict and the commands of every issuance across the land. His voice and mine are the same. And yet, prisoner dreams and Pharaoh dreams were not my deepest dreams. I remember the first, awakened from a deep sleep as a young boy by a startling vision. We were in harvest time. My brothers and I were out doing what we do in harvest. We were plucking the kernels from the stalk. The grains were set aside and the straw remaining. It was laid lengthwise, tied in bundles, set up on its end so that it might dry, gathered into sheaves. It's used for fodder and for bedding. All once in my dreams, all of the brothers had their sheaf escaped their grasp. They all came over to me, and they bowed down to me. Their sheaves bowing down to mine. It was an odd dream. I woke up uncertain, breathing heavy, sweating. I'm the youngest. Older brothers have little time or tolerance for me. And yet the dream said they bowed down to me. I dreamt again. This dream played out in the heavens. Sun, moon, and 11 stars, all bowing down to me. Modeling that my father, my mother, 11 brothers would bow down to me. Again, I woke in a start. It made no sense. I asked my brothers and my father to assist me in interpreting the dream. It only made them angry. They were filled with resentment. My brothers hated me. My father's confused by me. And yet, those were the dreams of God himself upon my life. They were dreams of transition and timing and change. But those dreams have come true. They have bowed down to me. When 2 years of famine had pressed the land, every nation around Egypt was struggling. Egypt was prepared by a gracious dream given by God Almighty to King Pharaoh. The dream confused the king. He was uncertain, so he called in his wise men, his magicians, his wizards. He asked them to help him interpret. None of them could. He was frustrated, long periods, burdened about his dreams. And then his butler whispered in his ear, "Oh, Pharaoh, do you remember when 2 years ago you had me imprisoned out of your frustration? In that time of incarceration, I came across a prisoner who helped me interpret a dream. Perhaps, O king, he might be of service to you. Next thing I know, I am scrubbed and cleaned and sitting in the presence of a king who's mumbling and bumbling about dreams he had in the dark of the night, and he didn't understand them. He told me his story. God granted the interpretation. 7 years of abundance followed by 7 years of famine. The message to Pharaoh: prepare. Make ready. During the years of abundance, you set in motion a readiness so that when the 7 years of famine come, you are prepared, because it will be a famine more devastating than Egypt has ever known. That was the dreams, their interpretation. Pharaoh tried to absorb what I said. He was first confused, then troubled, then burdened, and then convinced. And he said to me, since you alone are wise enough to interpret such a dream, you alone are wise enough to lead Egypt through the predicament of the next 14 years. And so here I am in a palace, adorned in royal robes. I have lived in a tent. I have lived in a cistern. I have lived as a slave and as a prisoner, and I'd have to say that a palace is much more to my preference. Nice digs. I have been here now 9 years. During the first 7 years, I was commissioned by Pharaoh to service and manage the abundance. The richness of the land produced well, and to every city in Egypt surrounded by the grain that was being produced. We gathered it into barns, into storage bins, into caves and caverns everywhere, so much that we could no longer count what had been assembled. We were preparing for the time of famine, and after 7 years of abundance, it is as though the heavens closed. Not a cloud could be seen in the sky. Not a single drop of rain fell to the earth. Soil that was receiving a seed, that seed turned to powder. And now, we are 2 years into that famine. It's there. It is there that my childhood dreams came true. I saw them in the city. 10 men, Hebrews, standing in a long line of foreigners waiting to make their request for provision. When the families of Egypt are burdened, unable to make their need of their day because of the famine, my stewards manage their accounts. But the foreigners, they must all come and present themselves to me. You cannot be too careful when the fate of a nation is at stake. The foreigners in a long line, those 10 men, they were slowly making their way before my presence. And when they arrived at the front, they did what every other foreigner had done. They bowed down to me with their faces to the ground. And when they did, my childhood dreams exploded in my mind. They said it would never happen. It was happening. They thought they came to buy food. They had no idea to whom they were speaking. I chose to challenge them, to treat them harshly. I asked them who they were and where they came from. I wanted to know their whereabouts, what support and provision that they had. I wanted to know about their family, their home. And they began to speak of Canaan. And then they spoke of their father, an old man, still very much alive. When I heard them speaking of their father, the breath froze in my chest. They went on to describe that they had a younger brother who was at home with their father. When they had told me their story, I chose to provide for them. I gave them abundant food supply. I even took the money that they had brought to purchase the food, and I had it secretly replaced in their sack. So when they would go away, they would discover that they had been given food for free. But they would have no idea from where it came. Before I sent them off, I put them under this test. If you are indeed honest men, and if you have not come as spies to this land, then you will fulfill this charge. You will not see my face again until I see that youngest brother of whom you have spoke. And to be certain that you will fulfill this assignment, one of you will remain with me. And I took Simeon. I gave him to my steward. He presented him among the captain of the guard and placed him in prison. You will not see my face again. You will not see your brother again until I see your youngest brother's face. And they left. Oh, they'll be back. I knew they would be back. Every nation around Egypt was floundering, struggling to survive. They were back again in a matter of a few short months. My steward recognized them first. He alerted me that they were once again standing in a long line of foreigners to make their request. I asked my steward, "You bring them into my quarters." And when they arrived, there were 9 brothers whom I had sent back to Canaan and 1 young man who I had never seen. He looked just like my dad. I brought Simeon back out to them. They were reunited. And when I walked into the room, all 12 sons of Jacob were in the same place for the first time. I asked my servants to prepare a meal. They began to serve. The Hebrews sitting at the table over there, all the brothers together, the servants sit over there. I sat at my own table, for everyone knows that Egyptians do not eat with Hebrews. They ate as though they had never eaten before. Famished, stuffing themselves. I just watched them. I watched them grabbing the food and placing it in their mouth. I watched Benjamin. He has this odd sideways motion when he chews. It's like my mother. I had to leave the room. Several times I went out and I washed my face and I dried my eyes. It was more than I could absorb. When the meal was complete, I agreed once more to provide them food. Only this time I would place them under a secret test. I would challenge them. You see, I wanted to know what kind of men they were. I know what kind of men they were 22 years ago. They were harsh and cruel and brutal, and I was the victim of their meanness. I want to know what kind of men they are now. Has God changed them, grown them, nurtured them, purified them? And so I presented before them an unfair test. I called my steward and I said to them, "Load their animals. And when you do, take my royal cup that has been present with us at this very table. Take it and place it in the baggage belonging to the youngest one. Put it in his sack, but do not tell a soul. Do it secretly." He fulfilled my assignment. Then I sent the brothers all away. I waited for about an hour or so. I called my steward to me. I said, "Gather a squad, and I want you to pursue those men. And when you catch up with them, when you come across them, accuse them of stealing from me. And when they object, when they refuse, you begin to search their baggage. Start with the oldest one first. Begin there. Open his baggage. And all the way down, boy after boy, until you arrive at the young one. And when you open his bag, you will find my cup. There, accuse him of stealing. As the guilty one, require him to return to me. And all the other brothers can go home." It was not long before the squad returned. And to my surprise, all 11 brothers returned. It appears they refused to let go of a brother. They refused to release him. Where was that 22 years ago? They were wanting to protect him, wanting to guard him. I told them, "Only the boy is guilty. You all can go home." And man by man, everyone said, we will give ourselves to the service of Pharaoh as slaves. We will not go home to our father without the boy. I was not expecting loyalty. I had no anticipation of nobility. And then Judah stepped forward and he asked to speak. Granted. He began to make an appeal on behalf of the boy. He talked about how much his father loved him and how tightly close they are knitted. He talked about how much he had pledged his own loyalty to his father by saying, "I will not allow the child to be hurt." He told his father that he would give his own life on behalf of the boy. And then he said it, "Take me. Take me." "I will serve as a ransom for the boy. I cannot bear to see the pain of my father again." I was dumbfounded. Judah? He was the instigator against me 22 years ago. He was the one who convinced his brother that I should be sold as a slave. He was the one that helped them understand that I could be expended from their family, was no longer necessary. Judah, he would lie to get his way, cheat in order to accomplish his own purposes, and manipulate every setting to his own designs. Judah. And yet now, he was offering himself as a ransom to preserve his brother and to protect the agony of his father. What happened to him? Perhaps it is because he has lost sons that God has softened his heart. Perhaps God has purified him. Reset his course from being self-absorbed and greedy. Perhaps God has grown this man. But when he said, "I will give myself as a ransom for the boy," I lost it. "Have everyone leave my presence." And the servants scattered, closing the door behind them. In the privacy of my own quarters, I revealed myself to my brothers. I'm Joseph, the one you sold so many years ago. Do not be afraid to come." Oh, they were terrified. I stepped forward. "Do not be afraid to come to me, for it is God who sent me ahead of you in order to save your lives. Come closer." And I stepped forward and I began to embrace him. I started with Benjamin. He was nervous, all stiff-armed. He didn't know what was going on, but my tears were falling on his own bare neck. And around the table I went, embracing every brother, even Judah, And then we sat down and we talked a long time. They talked about their sons and daughters. They talked about their grandchildren. They talked about how difficult it was in Canaan during the time of the famine and how pressed they were as a family. They talked about their father. It was as though the homesickness deep within my soul was beginning to release. And suddenly it hit me. from that conversation of redemption and forgiveness, release. I thought about my father. It hit me. You've got to bring him here. He has to come here. All of your families and your belongings, you have to come here, because there are yet 5 years of famine in front of us, and you will not survive. You got to come now. You have to bring my father now. So, they're coming. Out of the abundance of the blessing of Pharaoh's beast of burden, they are coming. They are being loaded and packed. They're coming. All of them. And when they arrive, all the abundance of Egypt will be at their disposal. Oh, I cannot wait to introduce them to my wife, Asenath, to show them my sons. I want to show them the land of Goshen, where they can pasture their flocks and herds. I will build them houses, and I will be their protection and guard the lives of the families of my father, Jacob, who they now call Israel. They're coming. When they left, I charged my brothers, do not quarrel on the way. They are such a contentious bunch. They pick at each other all the time. Simeon, he is the perfectionist. Everybody walks on eggshells around Simeon. Asher, when he coughs, he never covers his mouth. Drives me crazy. Zebulun, oh, his feet smell so bad. That's an aroma I have not forgotten in 22 years. When the servants pack his shoebox in Canaan, I hope they decide to leave it there. Egypt smells bad enough already. They're coming. The whole dysfunctional batch, they're coming. Here, all of them. And I can't wait to see them.
Genesis chapter 50, verses 16 to 23. So they approached Joseph, saying, I beg you, forgive the crime of your brothers and the wrong they did in harming you. Now, therefore, please forgive the crime of your servants, the servants of the God of your father. Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Then his brothers also wept, fell down before him and said, we are here as your slaves. But Joseph said to them, do not be afraid. Am I in the place of God? Even though you intended to do me harm, God intended it for good, in order to preserve a numerous people as he is doing today. So have no fear. I myself will provide for you and your little ones. In this way, he reassured them, speaking kindly to them. So Joseph remained in Egypt, he and his father's household. And Joseph lived 110 years. Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. I don't know that anyone enjoys detours. Interruptions are the life events that you can't plan for, you won't predict, and they will serve to knock you off your feet in a way that's very upsetting. This sermon series has not been about how to avoid detours. You won't. It's been about navigating the surprises by faith. Be certain
God is in the detours. He hasn't abandoned you. He's not forgotten you. And he's likely not punishing you. He's inviting you into a space where his larger picture can be learned and trusted. There's more going on here than what you see at this moment. What you're in right now is not the end of the story. There are more pages yet to be written. But will you allow, invite God to write a new story with your life from this point on?